The HD Movie Podcast may contain mature content, strong language, and spoilers. Hello and welcome to episode 129 of the HD Movie Podcast. I'm Darren Gaskell.
I'm Hayley Alice Roberts.
And in this episode, we're back into Spouse's Request territory. It is now the turn of my wife Alison again. And to celebrate her upcoming birthday, she has picked 2023's Love at First Sight, directed by Vanessa Caswell.
And available to watch on Netflix currently in the UK, and I'm guessing other places too, but you'd have to check that out.
As we said, Spouse's Request time again. Last time it was Phil picking the Calcium Kid. This time it's Alison picking 2023's Love at First Sight. So we're back in rom-com territory.
We are indeed. And this one is based on a book that came out in 2011. So it is an adaptation. I have not read this book, nor do I want to. So we'll preface that after, if the movie is anything to go by. But without further ado, I'm going to read a synopsis off IMDb written by TrivWiz, who we've never featured a synopsis of before on this podcast. So welcome to TrivWiz. You know Nick Reganis, but what are you going to do? Today should have been one of the worst of 20-year-old Hadley Sullivan's life. Having missed her scheduled flight by 4 minutes, she's stuck at JFK Airport and worried about being late to her father's second wedding, taking place in London, with a woman Hadley has never even met. Then she meets the perfect young man named Oliver in the airport's waiting area. Oliver is British and sitting in Hadley's row on the rescheduled flight. A long night on the plane passes, and once Hadley and Oliver arrive in London, they lose track of each other in the airport. Can fate bring them back together?
Yeah, let's just have a guess at that. Can fate bring them back together? Well, it doesn't take a genius to work out what's going to happen at the end of this one. And to be perfectly honest, the movie keeps pointing you in the direction where it's going anyway. So it's telling you what's going to happen before it's going to happen. And so that kind of destroys quite a lot of the jeopardy in this movie. Yes, I know that most rom-coms are basically will they, won't they, but you know that they will at the end. This one is pretty much undermining itself as it goes along, which is quite a weird tack to take for a rom-com. There are quite a lot of things that are wrong with this movie. I think that it is brave for trying to do something completely different in terms of rom-coms, but very, very little of it actually lands. Specifically, the narration that you get throughout the movie. There is too much voiceover through this movie. There's all these clever stats because Oliver is a statistician. He's studying the probability of certain things. But every so often you'll go to a location and they'll tell you stats about the locations, or they'll tell you stats about aircraft, or they'll tell you stats about airports, or they'll tell you stats about relationships. And that's all right for a few seconds, but to have it through the entire movie is really grating. Combine this with the fact that the narrator, who is Jamila Jamil, who I really, really like normally, however, she keeps turning up in all these different roles. Now, the movie obviously thinks this is clever and cute and quirky. It is not clever. It is not cute. It is not quirky. It is just bloody irritating all the way through the movie. I just think that this is a massively missed opportunity. The rom-coms are formulaic for a reason, because they're comfortable and we know what's going to happen at the end, but we don't mind that because we like being taken along the journey. And we like being taken along the journey with people that we care about. Now, Hadley, I got no problem with Hadley. I think she's an engaging character. She's slightly different to your normal rom-com heroine, she has got a lot going for her, and Hayley Lou Richardson is a very engaging screen presence. Oliver, on the other hand, I was so fucking irritated with him from minute one. The minute he started talking to her in the airport, I just thought, oh, mate, you are just such a fucking nerd. And I say this as a science nerd, and they keep referring to him as a maths nerd. I'm usually all for the nerd in a movie, but this guy, he's just too much. And he is grating, and he's got this smug air about him. And I really couldn't have given a shit about him. The only thing I was thinking about through most of the proceedings was, Hadley, if you end up with this guy, you could have done so much better.
This movie is incredibly cheesy. The cheese factor is so high, as is the cringe factor. Everything about this film just made me cringe. I couldn't stand the narrator. It was too much. It was just overdone and didn't really offer anything to the proceedings. It is literally just spelling out the whole movie for you. And when a film does that, you're just thinking, why and what am I supposed to get out of this? I didn't really care about anybody in this film. Like, none of the characters kept me engaged or held my attention. I did a lot of clock watching because I was just really struggling to get through this. Now, I'm not the biggest rom-com fan. After I finished watching the movie, I decided just to look up a list of rom-coms to see how many I'd actually seen and how many I actually like. And I think there was about a handful that I'd seen and liked. But that's another story. I don't need to list that out and reel that off now. So it's not my genre, basically. So I was not the target audience for this. And had it not been for the podcast, I probably would not have clicked on this on Netflix whatsoever. I would have just bypassed this like I do a lot of movies of a similar genre. So I just found it incredibly annoying. None of the characters were endearing. They were just irritating. And it did feel very Hallmark to a point, like a British Hallmark film, I would say. It did feature the typical quirky characters. You've got the situation with the wedding in London, where Hadley has never met her soon-to-be stepmother, and she just rocks up there, and then you've got these quirky friends that are getting her ready for the wedding. They were super annoying and didn't really add much, and you don't get much character development anyway. And then when we go to the other side of London for Oliver's mother's living memorial service. So basically, the character of Oliver's mother, she is dying of cancer, but instead of waiting to have a funeral, she wanted to be alive to see how people would celebrate her. So they have this very, very quirky Shakespearean reenactment ball type situation going on. And it's just all a bit too much, and it's all out of the realms of possibility and very far-fetched. And again, just everybody in this delivering their lines really cringeworthy. It was also sentimental. And even the moments that are meant to be tender, where he's speaking to his mother about he doesn't want to lose his mother, it just came off as very forced. Like, call me hard and cold, but I didn't even shed a tear in those moments either, when it's trying to push you towards that direction, because I just couldn't invest in any character in this film or the plot. Because you just knew exactly what was going to happen. They'd find each other eventually. They'd probably separate again because they would have had some ridiculous argument, as they do in all rom-coms, and then get back together at the end. And I think we just knew it was going to happen. But as I say, I was really surprised that it went in that direction. So when they're on the flight, you've got the narrator. At this point, she's an air hostess, and she's just basically saying they're going to lose each other in the airport. So they're telling this already. Why not leave it to mystery? Just leave it so we could just roll with the plot and not actually have to be signposted all the time. It's a very, very strange way. And I mean, as I say, I haven't read the book and I don't know how it's written, but I'm guessing maybe if it is in the narrator's point of view, I don't know. It could work as a novel, but not in a film. They obviously needed to rework this to actually adapt the story properly to a film instead of pointing everything out. So, unfortunately, this again wasn't a film for me, but psychologically I had to keep telling myself, at least it's not The Beast of Bunny, which, for those who haven't listened to this episode yet, that was our previous Easter special episode. One of the worst films I've ever seen in my life, for context. So I had to, as I say, keep telling myself that at least it's not that film. But again, this is not something I would ever want to revisit, and I'm hoping to wipe it from my brain.
I mean, to be fair, I am kind of a rom-com person. I do like a decent rom-com. I've seen quite a lot of them. I've seen much more than I probably think I have. Even though my chosen genre is generally horror, I do quite like to sit down and enjoy a good rom-com. Some of the Hallmark stuff we've covered, yeah, a lot of it's been rubbish, but a couple of them have been all right. And I don't mind generally sitting through Hallmark movies. This one's just weird because it seems to be thinking it's a lot smarter than it actually is. It's just annoying. And let's talk about transport, because you're going on about the flight. The flight is supposed to be 6 hours and 47 minutes long, which you are told before they get on the plane. How fucking long are they on that plane? Because they watch a movie, they have a meal, he gets to change into some pyjamas, he has a sleep, it's daylight when they wake up, they still haven't landed. What's going on with that flight? Is it the flight that's in Lost? Are they ended up going to like crash and go through this sort of temporal gateway or something? It just seems weird. Transport in London as well, where she's trying to get across London on a bus to Peckham. Get a taxi. Why would you get on a bus if you want to go to Peckham from Shoreditch? Get a taxi, because she's wanting to get across London to get to this living memorial service. But it's like, I know what I'll do. I need to get somewhere in London really quickly. I'll just jump on a bus, which is going to stop everywhere. Yeah, let me do that. Let me get on a bus. Not a taxi, which will just take you straight there. There just doesn't seem to be enough realism in this movie. And I know that realism isn't a big thing in rom-coms, but you need to have some sort of ground rules for this. And one of the ground rules is that you can't be thinking about transport as well, thinking, well, you know, I wouldn't have done that. And this whole excuse, oh, she's American, she doesn't know the rules. Yeah, but she knows what buses are. She knows what taxis are. So why doesn't she just get a cab? And it's stuff like this that undermines it even further. I mean, the narration is pointless anyway, but then you get characters behaving in ways that they probably wouldn't, because they're supposed to be smart with a decent amount of initiative, but yet they do stupid things throughout the movie just because they have to do stupid things to drag the suspense out or keep them apart. I didn't mind the somber bits. I think the living memorial, it is trying to make a play for your emotions, and it is a little bit heavy-handed. And considering I'm somebody that will cry at the drop of a hat, you only have to go to any sort of festival to know how much I cried during movies. It didn't get me at all. But his mum, Sally Phillips, I do like Sally Phillips. She's pretty good in everything. And I just have to admit that she once liked one of my tweets about Smack the Pony. So Sally Phillips gets a pass on this podcast because I'm shallow like that. But there's so much in this movie that I was thinking, oh, get over yourself. Just try and play it straight. Don't try and be clever. Don't try and say, oh, you know, look what we're doing here. Isn't this great? It's like, no, just do it normally. I don't care if it's formulaic. Just try to actually engage me with some of the character stuff. And then at one point, it gets to a certain bit of the plot. And then there's this really smug bit of voiceover from the narrator that says, you didn't think that that was the whole story, did you? And I was like, no, I didn't think that was the whole story, because you haven't told the rest of the story. I know that you're going to go back and tell it from his point of view, and then the rest of the story has to unfold anyway when we've got to the end of his bit. So that whole, oh, you didn't think that was it? No, because you've only got a third of the way through the story. You're going to just stop it a third of the way through and go, you know, that's it. Just make your own mind up about it. We're not going to give you anything more about it. And it's full of stuff like this where it's like, oh, we're cleverer than you are. You are not cleverer than we are. It's a fucking rom-com. Just play it as you would a normal rom-com. It doesn't have to break any rules. And it's so wrapped up in saying, oh, look how different we are. But it's not different, because all the signposts are there and all the main stuff is what you'd find in any other rom-com. So for it to dress itself up as something that's kind of out there and it's something different and it's something you haven't seen in a rom-com before, no, all that's crap. It's a rom-com. You have seen everything before. You know where it's going. You know where the kinks in the road are going to be. You know how it's going to finish. You know there's going to be quirky characters getting in the way. And as for quirky characters, I'm with you. They are really, really annoying in this movie. Especially Oliver's brother, who I wanted to fucking punch the minute he came on screen. It was like, oh, look, I've got a van and I'm into EDM music. It's like, oh, is that your personality? You drive a van and you DJ dance music. That's not a personality, mate. That is not a personality. It never will be. You need to do with something else, mate, because just you turning up and going, oh, you know, look at me, you're like, look, I'm the quirky one. He's the mathematician, but I'm the one who kind of dropped out. And so, it's like, I don't care. You were an annoying knob, and your brother is an annoying knob as well. And your parents should be fucking ashamed of the two of you. I mean, this guy, the statistician guy, Oliver, he's supposed to be studying at Yale, and yet he's kind of, he's just like wishy-washy. He's like, oh, you know, I don't want to do this. I don't want to say my feelings to anybody. It's like, oh, just shut up, Oliver. Just shut up. And before I run out of breath, I have to mention the soundtrack on this movie.
I was just about to get to that point, yeah. Actually. I thought this is the natural progression. But I feel this movie definitely pissed you off more than you thought.
Yes. Yeah, it has. It has.
Reflection.
And the weird thing is, I think there's about a third of a good movie in this. And I think the fact is that it goes about everything in such a wrong-headed way that it ruins everything that it could have done right. It's nicely shot. London looks great. There's nothing specifically wrong with the acting, but they have to say some very, very bad lines.
It's so, the script. The script really does matter. As you say, I agree with that. Like, the acting isn't terrible. They're just working the best way they can with the material given. And who knows how they felt about it when acting it out. Maybe they were cringing and just thought, there's no other way I can say this. But it's just one of those films, isn't it, where it's really try hard. And it tries so hard, it just feels like amateur dramatics in a certain way, that it's just so poorly constructed. You know, I'm not doing down all rom-coms. There are some really good ones out there, and I'm not against love or any romantic things. I'm not against that at all. But I have to be on board with characters to actually appreciate it. I have to invest myself and think, oh yeah, I really, really want these two people to get together. And in this one, it wouldn't have bothered me either way. There was just no joy in this. I couldn't find the joy. And yeah, going back to not being able to find the joy, what is with that cover of I Want to Dance with Somebody? So we're talking the famous Whitney Houston track here. There is a very dire, slowed down version of this played on the plane scene, where that scene, actually, the way it was shot, it was where they were getting intimate. I thought, oh no, they're not actually going to join the Mile High Club, are they? That actually went through my head. They didn't go there because this is quite a nicey nice, non-sexual film. It's not provocative in any way. It's just very nice, in inverted commas.
Yeah, that's, I did think that might happen, because they meet each other outside the toilets in business class, and they're both standing outside the toilets. And I was thinking, are they both going to go in there? And it doesn't really kind of pan out like that. But the way it's shot, they're kind of looking at each other in that sort of slightly longing way. And I'm thinking, really? Are they going to put this in a 12A movie? I mean, it doesn't happen, and various things happen on the flight, but so they don't end up sleeping together on the flight. But I thought that would have been an interesting turn of plot if they stood outside the toilets and they'd been going on about fate and how things can keep people apart or put people together. And then all of a sudden Oliver says, oh, by the way, while we're up here, how about I rail you in the bogs? Now, that would have probably been something that would have been out of left field, and I would have thought, yeah, I wasn't expecting that. To be perfectly honest, I might have enjoyed that line, but it would have derailed the rest of the plot. So, but the soundtrack, it is so weedy. It is so wishy-washy. Every musical choice was sending me to sleep. It's just the kind of music that crawls its way to the end of the speaker and then just falls out. There's nothing inspiring about the music in this. It's just aimless. It doesn't get you in the feels at all. It doesn't drive the plot along. It's just a lot of acoustic stuff with people whining over guitars. Come on. There's got to be some joy in this movie, but as you say, there is no joy in this movie. It is just trying to be so different, and all of its choices have got to be so different. And that cover, the Whitney Houston cover, it's like, what were they fucking thinking? It's dreadful. The original version, it's peppy, it's got a lot of energy, it's joyful. This one, it's just like somebody's like, oh God, I've got to sing this. All right, okay, let me just go ahead and do this. Like, oh, what are the lyrics? Give me the card with all the words on. I guess I've got to do this. And all of the soundtrack is like that. When you're meant to be getting into the swing of things and thinking, right, we've got a race against time. He's got to get here. Got to get over there. They've got to meet each other here. They've got to sort this out. And then everything's got to come together. All of these madcap chases, which would, in any other rom-com, have been like the high points, or in the case of Big Fat Greek Wedding 2, the low points, where it was just lots of people running backwards and forwards to jaunty music. That's annoying, but it's annoying in another way. But at least it's got some energy, it's got some drive. This, every time they're getting from one place to another, you've just got this dirge in the background. It's like, oh, here they go, they're going across the sea again. It's like, good grief. The soundtrack choices have got to match what's on the screen. You don't want somebody making a mad dash across somewhere and then it sounds like somebody's fucking funeral on the soundtrack. I don't get so much of this movie. So much of this is down to choices which no right-thinking person would ever have made. I can't believe that at some point in the editing suite, when they'd got a reasonably finished version of this movie and they're looking at this stuff that's happening on the screen and then they're listening to the soundtrack, I can't believe nobody thought, that's completely fucking at odds with what I can see on the screen. It's just somebody plodding along on the soundtrack where somebody's actually trying to get to somewhere within a certain time frame, otherwise everything's completely buggered. I don't get so much of this movie. And at the end it seems to have this climax where it's almost kind of winking at you, going, hey, you know, look what we've done at the end. It's like, you haven't earned that at all. You haven't earned it in one single way. You've ticked enough rom-com points off, and now you've just put them together at the end in a fairly perfunctory way. They meet up with each other. They kind of realise that they're supposed to be together. And that's pretty much the end of the movie. And it's like, was that it? Is that what you've dragged us along for 85 minutes just to do that at the end? Is that all you've got at the end of this movie? Is that what you're going to give us as the final scene? Not good enough. Absolutely not good enough. I was just thinking, why? Why is this so dull? You need the big finish. And no, it's just two people
slogging.
Yeah.
Talking outside a posh venue.
Yeah, and just
witter. It's basically happily ever after, isn't it?
Yeah, that and just is literally wittering away about stuff. Yeah, the guy realises that he's got to stop talking in stats and has to express his feelings in a different way. But even that doesn't really work. They haven't built that up at all. And yeah, I mean, they end up together and then there's this epilogue where...
More statistics.
You're told how long they're going to be together. But you're also told...
how many times they shag.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like...
we need to know.
It's like, I don't want to know that. I just want to know that they end up together. It's not like, oh, guess what? Guess how many times they do it while they're married. It's like, I don't fucking care. It doesn't matter how many times they do it. But it's like, oh, yeah, you know what? They'll have so many arguments and then they'll make love so many... It's like, I do not care. I don't care about this couple anyway. I certainly don't care about how many times they're going to fuck each other.
I mean, at the start of the movie, we find out she doesn't like mayonnaise. There's all these little quirks we find out about them. That one is the only thing that really sticks out of my mind. There were other ones. I was thinking, okay, so we've gone from that to knowing how many times they have sex, how many arguments they have. It's just very strange. This is a very basic movie. It's written in a basic way. Someone just wanted to write a book or make a film with no real heart to it. I mean, I shouldn't diss the book because, as I say, I have not read it. And it could be good for all I know. It was obviously good enough to make a movie out of, but clearly it hasn't translated from page to screen in any logical way. It's very, very weird. And I get, I suppose, like, you know, in a book, obviously you're going to build the characters and you are going to give more information that you can't really do on screen. But knowing that she hates mayonnaise is not relevant to the plot because it doesn't really go anywhere. We don't get that impression. This film is just awkward. It's awkwardly put together. It just bumbles along in an embarrassing way. When they do finally meet up and then they have the disagreement and then she runs off. Of course, she's left a fucking bag behind. Who saw that coming? It's just so contrived. And it's just making me cringe so hard just talking about it. I'm just cringing, basically, thinking about this film. And it's probably on the bottom of the barrel of rom-coms that I've seen. I mean, I can't say it's definitely the worst. It probably isn't. We must have waded through more shit than this. But it's pretty low on my estimate. I mean, 2 weeks running, I'm really, really sorry. Two episodes running that I've been so negative. We need to get some more positive material on this podcast. But, you know, it wouldn't be interesting if we loved every movie.
No, and I'm glad I watched it. I mean, I didn't enjoy it an awful lot, but I am glad I watched it because it just shows that you can't just toss off, sorry about the phrase, a rom-com. There's got to be some skill in it. Really good rom-coms take skill and effort and decent writing and good performances. And it's not something that you think, oh, it's all light and frothy. Anybody can do that. No, that's not true. Really good rom-coms really do take a certain amount of skill. And this doesn't have that certain amount of skill. It plods. And every time it tries to say, hey, aren't we giving you something that you've never seen before in a rom-com? Well, no, you're not. You're just boring me, to be perfectly honest. And regardless of the fact that you're telling me that these characters are supposed to be quirky and supposed to be lovable and that I'm supposed to follow them all around London, I've got to have something else other than that. You can't just tell me that they're quirky. I want to feel that they are quirky and not in an annoying way. And I think Hadley, her character does get away with it, because she's a bit more grounded and she's a little bit more cynical about everything. But I don't get where they're going with Oliver's character. I think they were trying to make him nerdy and cute. I think he's just annoying.
Definitely. And he was one of the Peter Beals on EastEnders. That's a side note. Many, many years ago. So that's all I could say. I was like, oh, it's one of the Peter Beals.
Yeah.
One that did well. His career went well. But then he's appeared in this, so I honestly don't know. I think being in EastEnders is better than being in this.
Maybe we'll cover the Peter Bealey-verse at some point. We may follow all the people who have been Peter Beale in EastEnders and see what they've done in the cinematic universe. But I think that's a long way down the track. That's a very deep cut. So I think we'll just cover usual movies and then maybe like episode 800, we might go to Peter Beale.
Yeah, or any sort of long-running soap character that's changed heads at various points over the years. I mean, does anybody want that? Is there a market for that? Please let us know. So, talking of statistics, as we always round off our episodes, we give you statistics on how these movies fared with critics and with the public alike. So on IMDb, it has a very generous 6.8 out of 10, and I'm probably going to fall off my chair when I tell you the Rotten Tomatoes scores. 74% tomato meter and 82% audience score. What the actual...
You've got to be fucking kidding me.
No, I'm not lying.
Let's have a look. Oh, no, that's true. No, I can see the stats. That is true.
I'm not making this up just to make you blow a blood vessel. Honestly, it's the truth.
What were these people watching? Yes, I know that the Rotten Tomatoes stats, it's like if you thought it was good or better, it's classified as being a hit. But, I mean, I didn't even think this was good. It's just so full of holes. And I know it's a bit of a feel-good movie, but there are better feel-good movies than this out there. It was
maybe
just
we'll pick one next week.
Yeah, maybe. It was just frustrating. It's a frustrating experience because it could have been good. But I don't think the approach works at all. It just feels a little bit smug to me. That's the feeling I got coming out of this movie, that it was slightly smug and slightly too up itself. And it was thinking that it was way better than it actually was and that it was pushing the boundaries of the rom-com. Whereas it wasn't, to be perfectly honest, for me. And I don't care about rom-coms pushing boundaries. I want to be entertained. I want to have a warm feeling at the end of it. I was neither with this. It wasn't entertaining. And at the end of it, my feeling was, oh, fucking get over yourself. Especially when it's revealed what he's researching. And it's a spoiler, but I don't care. I'm going to spoil it. What he actually is researching is the statistical probability of love at first sight. And when he came out with that line, there was a voice in my head that went, oh, for fuck's sake.
I was just relieved when it finished, because the opportunity I had to watch this film, my daughter had taken a nap, and obviously I did not know when she was going to wake up, whether I could survive this whole movie in one sitting. So I kept pausing it. I was like, oh my God, there's 45 minutes left. She did wake up about 5 minutes before it ended, but that was fine. So I actually did give it a thumbs down on Netflix. You know, when it pops up at the end, how would you rate this film? I literally did actually press not for me. I've never done that before. I've never bothered with that feature, but I just thought, what the hell? I don't want to get recommended films like this ever again.
That's fair.
So take note, Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, I generally don't, but I think it is a reflection of what this movie doesn't do well, that it got a thumbs down. And I can't blame you for doing it, because it doesn't really work in any way as a rom-com. I think that, and I've got to say this, that even though a lot of the Hallmark movies we've covered, they stick to a very specific template, and a lot of them don't have great acting, and a lot of them have been written clearly by a computer. But even then, I enjoyed a lot of the Hallmark movies we've covered more than this. There's just something about this. It's glossy, yes. It's got some decent acting talent in, yes. It's a very Netflix type of movie. It's the sort of thing that it's really, really well made. Technically, there is nothing wrong with it. It's just the script and the general feeling you get watching this movie that needs the work. And it's unfortunate, but there you go. Love at first sight? No, not really. I mean, I didn't really fall in love with this at all.
I do wish we could chat longer.
And that's it for episode 129 of the HD Movie Podcast. As always, thank you for listening.
And if you'd like to follow us on social media, we are on X and Instagram at HD Movie Podcast.
Next episode, it's another round number. We've clocked up 130 episodes next time. So, as we normally do when we get to a round number, we'll do something a little bit different. And we're not talking about a specific movie next time. We are going to do something that we've been threatening to do for a while. It's the return to the Mandela Effect.
Yeah, we will be heading down the Reddit rabbit hole to find the most weird and strange Mandela effects, things people believe that have happened that it just kind of isn't plausible that it has, or maybe some things that might actually make you think, whoa, I don't remember it like that. What is going on? So join us as we deep dive into about 6-ish Mandela effects. I think that's what we're plotting so far, but you'll find out in the next episode when it's all recorded.
Until then, stay safe, everybody, and we'll see you soon. The HD Movie Podcast is presented by Hayley Ellis Roberts and Darren Gaskell. Its music is written and performed by Mitch Bay. You can find the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Samsung Podcasts, Amazon Music, Podchaser, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Listen Notes, and Podbean.